The Grow My Cleaning Company podcast helps owners of cleaning companies just like you to grow your company and yourself so you can make more money and finally get the time and money freedom that probably got you into this business. Discover how to automate and create systems that allow you to grow like crazy without losing control. If you dig the show and want to show some love, subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes. It really helps. Enjoy the show. Hey, Clean Nation, Mike Campion here with the, I'm assuming we've only known each other for a couple minutes, but she seems amazing. Erin Broderick. Before we hit record, by the way, I said it perfectly. And because I'm drunk, you know, you hit record and things get nuts. So Erin Broderick, she started BG Custodial, and don't send me emails. I'm not drunk. I'm just kidding. She started BG Custodial June 2017, Columbus, Ohio. And it says on my intro, USA. So apparently we are keeping Columbus in the US now. I thought it was Canadian. What do I know? They clean 250,000 square feet of commercial. And by the way, let's just go say we clean 250,000 square feet of, you know, let's why not, you know, every day. 200,000 that they clean well. So the 50,000, it's iffy. We don't know. We won't say which is which. Not part of the bio. I'm just feeling frisky and like a terrible human. They've got 10 employees. They're looking to grow. Tell me if I missed anything, Erin, and if there's any fun facts about you and your company that the audience absolutely needs to know.
I think that covers it pretty well. And I do like to say 250,000 square feet as well.
Okay, good. So we're both on that frame of like, hey, let's, we're not even rounding up. We're just using a different word.
A different point of view, I like to say, you know.
Although then it also sounds like, well, that's a long way from a million. So I don't know, like there's kind of
two schools of thought on that.
Exactly. Right. It could go. Yeah. We'll workshop that one. We'll see which way we're going to go. All right. Wait, so you start 2017, we're recording this 2021. Give us your best, most fun, scary, weird story of your 4 years, give or take, in the janitorial industry.
You know what? It's when we started getting things that I could no longer do everything myself. When it was really imperative suddenly that we have people, and that was like a stepping stone of growth that kind of makes you wake up and see how, first of all, it's a good thing because the business is growing, but it's kind of sobering because now you're really reliant on a team. Because in the beginning, you know, when you're doing the cleaning yourself, it's much more like, oh, I've got this all under my own control. I can always count on myself, blah, blah, blah. But when you have to start counting on others, that's when you really have to level up as a leader, as well as, you know, your own team member too. You know, it's, that was probably the most sobering part, but now we're on a good path forward that I think, everybody is part of the same vision. So they all see themselves the way I did when I was doing it alone, you know? So
I heard two things. One, Erin saying it's a different kettle of fish when you want to own. Who you need to be as a leader and an entrepreneur needs to change pretty substantially to go from cleaner to owner, which I couldn't agree more with. Two, I heard her use the word sobering twice. I think that's because of the I'm drunk thing, and she's trying to lovingly like help me come to the light. So that's very thoughtful of you. Most guests, you know, don't care about my dismal, you know, drunken position. And by the way, it's 9 o'clock in the morning right now, so I don't drink. But if I did, I think I'd be not drunk at nine. But you know, there's no guarantees. All right, let's get sexist for a minute. She's like, well, I didn't see that coming, but sure, let's do that. For those of you that aren't, that are just listening, I'm a big smelly boy. Erin's a cute little female. And I'd say probably 85% of the time, if it's a residential cleaning maid service, it's woman owned. And if it's a janitorial service, it's a big smelly dude like me. No judgment. I love kind of when people do something outside of their, like, this is where you got to go. What made you pick janitorial as opposed to residential? And especially when they're cleaning, right? Like you see old smelly dude like me cleaning the middle of the night, not young, you know, pert little lady. What made you decide commercial versus residential?
Well, I, you know, looking at the revenue models and understanding kind of what my view of this industry was before I got into it, that to me, that was the only thing that made sense in my head. I didn't really understand, kind of still don't understand, how one scales a residential cleaning business to earn money for the ownership, administration, you know, beyond the actual cleaners. Now, I know people are doing that. It's a foreign world to me. But to me, it was just in my head, if I wanted to have a company, it would be through the janitorial commercial contracts that had enough to employ other people and as well as, you know, peel off a bit of a salary for myself and any other people I bring into the office or business development, things like that. So really, Mike, it's from my own ignorance of the residential world, because I just, you know, what I saw in my past life of work was, you know, these big office buildings where people cleaned. So it's kind of just all I saw.
So let me give not just Aaron, but Clean Nation a quick encouragement there. A lot of, and by the way, I totally appreciate you going, I'm sure it can happen. It's just not my world. We coach owners of residential and commercial, and absolutely you can be very scalable with residential, not for Aaron, just for everyone else hearing going, oh my gosh, Mike hates residential. No. It's just Aaron saying that's not her bag. It's okay. That said, I love the way you approached it. So many people, and I think part of the reason it's broken up by gender, oddly, it's not like anyone says you go here, you go there. I think females are more comfortable with, oh, I have a home, I've cleaned that home, I'm used to it, therefore I'll go where I'm comfortable. I don't know why guys would be, maybe it's the floor work piece of it, I don't know, but people go where they're comfortable. And I love that you, to a degree, you were comfortable there, but more what I heard you saying is the business model made sense to me. And that's constantly when I'm coaching to people, when I go, which is better, is it residential or commercial? And it's like, it really depends on your goals, your strength, not what you're comfortable with. So I love that you kind of elevated yourself above, well, I'm comfortable with this or not comfortable with that, into here's my goals. Here's the result I'm trying to achieve. And I think commercial is going to be the best route to get me there, as opposed to, well, I'm comfortable with this, therefore I'll do that, even if it's not great. So I love that. So thank you for, it's nice when I'm always pounding a drum and someone else pounds it a little bit. I'm like, hey, listen to them. See. So nicely done, Aaron. And she's sober. So when she says it, you can trust it.
That's true. I am sober. But
I'm assuming, I don't know, I've not done a blood alcohol test, but from her eyes, the way she's showing up, I'm going sober. I'm going to take you at your word.
It is noon here where I'm on the East Coast.
Oh, and that, forget it. We're way past drinking time.
No, but I do want to say this. Having mentorship really helped me to think bigger as well. It wasn't just me. It's never just one person. It's always like how we're connected to other people. So mentors in my life really helped stretch my mind to see what could be possible. So I just want to say that.
Obviously that's the business that we're in, but prior to me being in that business, I've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars on mentors for myself. We have a multi-million dollar company coaching others, and I still, the mentorship program I'm in now, $70,000 a year. So it's not just something I say because that's the business I'm in. I've lived it before, I'll live it after. So abso-frickin-lutely. All right. That said, what's going on in your world? How can I help make your life slightly better? Speaking of mentorship, how can I help? What's going on?
So we're finding ourselves, as every other American and maybe even people in other countries, you know, after COVID, now suddenly the minimum wage isn't officially, but it's kind of on the street, $15 an hour. People are balking at anything under 17, frankly, in our market. So people, you know, obviously the Amazon headquarters in town and other, there's a lot of retail presence here in Columbus, as far as like distribution centers, those take a lot of the labor pool that we work with. So we're kind of competing with those places, and they're paying 17 to 22 an hour entry level. So my question, Mike, and what I'm glad we were able to connect on this is, and I'm sure it could help other people too, is how do you have that conversation with prospective clients? Because they are seeing this too, you know, property managers, for example, that they have all their tenants are dealing with a tough business climate, coming out of one at least. And, you know, how do you have that conversation of like, you know, cleaning, not to mention it's now a extremely essential service, but it's also one that has, you know, it's jumped up. This is maybe 18 months where before COVID, it was $15 an hour was a good wage for a cleaner. Now that's like starting, if not below, at least where I'm at. So if you could give me some pointers on how to talk that through with prospective clients, because we're seeing a lot of people wanting to make a switch, but kind of guiding us on what the pricing should be. And sometimes it's like, well, we want to give our input too, as far as what we're seeing. And so that's kind of my point.
As you might guess, I have thoughts. I have strong thoughts, and I'm very excited to share them with you. So let me start with a little bit of kind of who we need to be. And then I'll give what I think will be a general answer that'd be applicable, because we've got listeners all over the world and clients all over the world. And I think that will answer your specific question. But if it doesn't, feel free to be like, hey, that's all well and good, but you didn't answer my question, and I'll circle back. But I think I can catch it with a more generalized answer. So first of all, and I love, my favorite thing right when we started was you said, I had to level up who I am. So few people get that. They're like, I want to stop cleaning and start owning. What do I need to do? And the answer is always, it's not what you need to do. It is what you need to do. Second, first, it's who you need to be. And then you can get what you need to do. And then you can have what you want to have. It's always be, do, have. We want to have, do, be. you know, we want to set the fire and go, you give me some heat and I will put wood in. It's like, that is not how this game is played. No matter how committed to that strategy you are, it is not going to be effective. So let's talk about who we need to be first, or how we need to look at the problem first. And then we can kind of get into the nitty gritty. So what I forget, like, speaking of mentors, one of my mentors, and I wish I could remember which, so I could give credit where credit is due. But I think it's actually a mindset coach said, anytime you say the word problem, challenge, take it out and put in opportunity. And it's so crazy how just doing that seems like, we're just playing with words. It completely changes the frame my mind puts around it and the questions that I ask and the answers that I give. So at the base level, it would be, I can't afford the two questions I wouldn't start with. And I'm not saying you did, but people are, would be, I can't afford to hire labor. That's how do I solve that problem? And my people don't understand how expensive it is. How do I solve that problem? If we take out problem and put in opportunity, where's the opportunity in not having very much labor? I'm going to answer the question, but you're a lot closer just by changing the question from, I can't afford labor, what do I do? Disempowering questions, probably going to get you a disempowering answer. Where's the opportunity in low cost labor being short supply? Empowering question. Once I answer, you're like, that's kind of obvious. But if I would have not changed the question, just giving you an answer, it would have sounded genius. Like, I would have never gotten that. But when you just change the answer to a more powerful question and I give you the answer, like, I could have got there. So step one is really ask empowering questions where the opportunity is, as opposed to, I don't say complaining, but focusing on the problem. So if we come from the opportunity, there is a massive amount of opportunity. So you kind of alluded to it, where 2 years ago, cleaning was typically not something people were super fired up about talking about. With the advent of COVID, it's up there. People are, they know. I don't think we're quite into the sexy realm yet, but we're a crap ton closer than we were like a couple of years ago. You know, we're still not selling like, you know, Lamborghinis, but it's we're close. We're in the zeitgeist here. So there's certainly opportunity there. Second, it is always supply and demand. So before COVID, before massive inflation, before the government decided to pay people to stay home, the supply of labor, low-cost labor, was semi-commensurate with the demand for low-cost labor. So that was just the reality that we're in, that we were in. Now, with the government paying people to stay home, people go, well, the government pays me $15 an hour to do nothing effectively, or not by hour, but whatever the commensurate, you know, if I work 20, 30, 40 hours a week at $15, I get similar from the government. And I've been getting a bunch of money from the government. So what used to be, I need this to pay my rent, is now my rent's paid, right? So that could create a problem with a shortage of labor, could also create an opportunity. So for me, we've always coached from the beginning of time. We do not attract people based on wages. So one of the first mistakes I made when I started hiring, because my first business 20 years ago was a commercial cleaning company. I pay, and it shows you how old I am. We're paying $8 an hour, which at the time was like reasonable. That wasn't screwing people. I'm just old. you know, if we pay 10, we'll get a whole different caliber of person. Oh my God, if we pay 12, forget about it. Same daggum thing. Now you go from $10 an hour to $45,000 a year, you will get a different caliber of person. Generally, if you go from 8 to 10, 10 to 12, or in today's climate, 13 to 15, 15 to 17, believe it or not, you're not going to get a different caliber of person. So, and you don't want to compete on that, especially when it comes to things like, you said, well, I'm compete with Amazon. They've got benefits. They've got whatever. So if we as smaller, and when I say smaller, anyone employing less than probably 250 employees, companies trying to compete on labor and benefits, we're going to get our head handed to us in any market. And it just gets worse when it's like this. So what we always compete on is experience. And it's so funny, I've been doing this for 25 years as I build teams. And I love how you said, I had to evolve as a leader. I had to build a place that people wanted to be. Anyone can hand out money, talk to the federal government, right? But what the government's terrible at is culture. It's a terrible, shut up, sit down, wait in line, give your check. You're worthless. Shut up. Like, that's kind of the wait in line. Call a number that's never going to answer. Like, that's the experience they have for that money. And there's two kinds of people. One that's like, I will sit here and wait for my government cheese. That's all. I got cable, baby. I got Netflix. I don't ever have to leave the, you know, my butt is stapled to this thing. We're not competing for that guy. So when the government pays him or her more money, fine. Was never interested in hiring that guy anyway. People like you and I and the people that we're going to work for go, you know what? I would rather be out in the world contributing, creating something, having relationships with other humans outside of Netflix. And I would literally rather do a job if it's the right job and I enjoy the people I'm working with and I'm getting something fulfilled. I'm part of something that I believe to be important. I will actually do work for that money over nothing for that money, believe it or not. So I was coaching that beforehand. And it's just now the importance of that is dialed way up. So first and foremost, foundationally, we have to build something the right people are compelled. The Netflix dude ain't ever going to come. It don't matter, right? But the right guy or gal will get off of his butt and come out to work if it is, I enjoy the people. I enjoy the challenge. We're part of a mission. We talk about core values. For us, it's have fun, make money, be real, and help out. They can't get that in their regular lives, right? They come to work with us and they're like, oh, this is these are my people. I love these people. I would hang out here for free. It's amazing, right? So once you start with that foundation, then we can overlay the money on it. But if we don't have that foundation and you have a crap job and you're just competing with Amazon or Walmart or whatever, or McDonald's for God's sake, based on money and whatever, you're going to lose. They have name recognition. They have more money. They have more benefits. They have the buying power of thousands of employees. We can't compete. So foundationally, we always start with the experience that the person is going to have. Now we still have to overlay that with money, right? Like we're not looking to get people that work for free, but we don't want mercenaries. So there are people that the vast majority of people, I say it all the time, we have the best team ever. Any of you guys that have dealt with any of our coaches or anyone, they're amazing. And I tell them, this is a recorded thing they can listen to. I pay them to edit it. So some of our team, I pay to listen to. All of them can make more money somewhere else. Not that we pay low. I like to think we pay a little above, you know, if it's a 1 to 10, 10's the absolute most anyone could make. And one's, you know, they're getting taken advantage of. I'd like to think we pay a 7 or 8, but there's still 9s and 10s out there. They don't look, they don't care because it's the experience that they're looking for. And people think, oh, when it's, you know, 40, 50, 80, $100,000 salaried people, it's different. Yeah. It's more so with, it's so much easier. They expect that, right? If you're a $100,000 employee and you bring that kind of value, you've got options and you know you've got options. So they just expect it. It's table stakes. At the low wage, it used to be, holy crap, Aaron, you know, this guy, you know, the employees, you know, the employee's name and you care about them. You give two craps. That was like, oh my God, this is brand new. You bring that into this world. It's still way above what your competitors are doing, but often not enough. So all that to say, 80% should be focused on the experience that they have, the core values that you share, which won't be everybody, right? When we say have fun, make money, be real, and help out, I don't know, 70% of the population is like, screw that noise. That's okay. The 30% that's like, you're speaking my language, man. I've always wanted that, but I never even knew I wanted, no one even articulated it. As soon as you said have fun, make money, be real, help out, I'm like, that's even a thing? I can do that? Those people aren't going to be a little in, they're going to be all in. And as long as I treat them fairly, it doesn't matter if it's $14 an hour, or $16 an hour, right? They don't want to be screwed because that would violate the have fun because they're getting screwed. It would violate the making money because I'm screwing them. So as long as I keep those core values, have fun, make money, be real, it wouldn't be being real. Hey, I really value you. You're amazing. I love you, but I'm going to pay you in hugs and shiny buttons. Like that's clearly not real. So as long as I don't violate the core values, there's a band of pay I can be within and it really doesn't matter, right? If I try to pay $6 an hour, they're going to know it's not fair. If I pay them $22 an hour, they're going to be like, thank you. But I'm not going to buy the extra loyalty. It's just money kind of wasted. So foundationally, experientially, core values match. Layer on top of that, I like to be 10 to 15% above average. Like if it's $15 an hour, yeah, I'll pay 16, but I'm not going to pay 19. So that's the opportunity there is to shift from a time for money based relationship, which was always flawed. You could get away with it before labor was low. Now that labor is low, this is really good coaching. Now it's like, this is table stakes. There's no longer negotiable. So there's the opportunity on the labor side. Believe it or not, that's the small opportunity. The bigger opportunity talks about, well, what about the pricing? Sister, you are being bamboozled. They know there is no low-cost labor. It's in the news. Inflation is insane. They have other vendors and they probably employ low-cost labor. They are well aware there's none to be had. So you're like, how do I have that conversation? Hey, Aaron, we don't screw our people. We've got unlimited potential of labor. You don't know how to find it. It ain't cheap. So what used to be $1,000 a month is now $1,500. And if you don't want to pay it, good luck. Best of luck. Go hire. Go get them. And they'll go, no, I don't want to do that. I'll pay the $500. So it is a massive opportunity. Like, how do you tell them? You just tell them. And you have this little thing called reality on your side and the news constantly churning out inflation. I've literally had some of my Millionaire Mastermind folks tell me they've got competition going, we're not even taking new clients because they have not been able to take advantage of the opportunity of, we know how to get low cost labor and no one else does. So this is the time to take over. So if you were spending $500 a month on your employee attraction system, whatever that was for traffic, and now you spend $2,000, that's fine. If you were paying $15 an hour and the new reality is $17, don't hire mercenaries. Don't be like, people ask me about signing bonuses. No, that's the wrong person, right? If you need to pay someone a bonus to show up day one, that's the wrong guy, right? I'm not saying signing bonus is immoral. I'm just saying the guy that you're hiring has to be constantly bought. And as long as you're willing to constantly buy him and know that as soon as someone will pay more to buy him or her, it's over. I think Zappos is where I got this from. They'll pay $2,000. I don't know if they still do this for years. They pay $2,000 for an employee to quit. I love that because everyone's like, what? Yeah. If $2,000 is all that it takes to get you out of here, I don't want you on my team. Are you kidding me? I've got you talking to customers and employees. And if you're like, $2,000 is more valuable to me than this thing I'm a part of, get the frick out. So that's like a reverse. It's a firing bonus, right? Not only do I not want to pay a hiring bonus, I don't do it because my people are amazing. They stick and I don't think anyone would take it. But I love the concept of how we look at customers. We don't bribe them to come or bribe them to stay. We pay them to get the hell out. And if they'll leave for $2,000, thank God. Thank you for telling me. It was worth the $2,000 to know I had a guy that was really not a part of the mission. Right. So believe it or not, I find it to be a massive amount of opportunity. This is a time where many will contract and say things like, we are not taking new clients, or I can't get employees, so I go back to work and eventually I just quit. So if our competitors are contracting and getting afraid, this is when we take over. That's exactly they do it with airlines, right? A big airline will come into a little route that costs $150 a seat and they'll be like $69. And then they're like, yep, I'll write a $80,000 check a month to run that route for 7 months until the little guy can't do it. And then now he's out, it's a monopoly, the $150 seat's now a $250 seat. I'm not saying we have to be predatory like that, but the environment as it is setting that up, right? The seat that was $150 is now $250. Some of the people aren't going to understand to raise prices and they're going to go out of business. The people that do understand to raise prices, we're not trying to gouge. We just understand the market, the tempo of the market. And I promise you, I've even had clients come and say they've raised prices on people. Be like, I can't pay it. I got to go. Okay. Best of luck. Came back a month. I'm sorry. Can we please come back at the new price? We couldn't find anyone. So it's really just you understanding what's going on in the market and looking for the opportunity as opposed to the challenge. All right. Whew, that was a diatribe. What's going on with you? Questions, comments, rude remarks, more suggestions. I get sober. What do you got?
I think those are great points, Mike. I think a big thing in business too is like expanding your thinking to not just think about, I need an employee to clean right now. Mm-hmm. You want to hire someone that's going to last and it's going to contribute to your mission and the values and be part of the team. So everyone they interact with, every client they deal with, every coworker is, you know, dealing with a solid person who's conveying the message and the values of the team or the company. So it can be painful in the short term, but much more rewarding in the long term to wait to find the good people and the good clients. Like you said, like if they're willing to just leave, then you didn't want them anyway. And those problems will pop up somewhere soon anyway. And I've always found that to be true. And things that don't go so well, you know, you're happy to see them go because you just know like there's going to be more issues or there are issues you want to just be done with. So I think that's all wonderful advice.
Beautiful. All right. Cleaning Nation. Sorry, we went a little long, but everything we talked about makes sense in all markets because the concepts are the same. It's just two sides of the same coin. But as of today, this is super, super important. So I wanted to make sure we dove a little deeper than usual. So if this is scratching where you're itching, you're like, holy heck, I need that. I want more. Go to growmycleaningcompany.com. We've got, I got to check. It's maybe 700, well over 600 podcasts. 15,000 member Facebook group that's free. We've got an on-demand training that's the best 40 minutes I've got packed in. I don't even think there's anything for sale. We are also very selective about our clients and we get hundreds and hundreds of applications. We'll take 10 or 20 a month. So don't even worry about us selling you something. If you're right, we'll talk. If not, move along. But there's a bunch of free stuff, growmycleaningcompany.com. Everything you need to grow a cleaning company, check it out. I'll see you there. Well, here we are at the end of the podcast, and you made it. Great job. I've got a little bonus for you before for sticking through with me. But like I mentioned before, if you got value out of this podcast and you want to show a little love, subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes, Spotify, wherever the heck you're listening to this thing. Share with a friend. Share the love. And as a special thank you for those of you that stuck with me to the end, how about I give you my personal phone number so we can text? It's a great way for me to get to know you, your business, your goals personally. So shoot me a text now, 602-932-6431. That's 602-932-6431. I am the only one who responds to these texts, and I will personally respond to everyone I possibly can as long as this number is manned. Don't know how long we're going to keep this at the end of the podcast, so grab it now. 602-932-6431. Give me a text. Say hey. Can't wait to meet you.